Welcome.
Welcome to this week's episode of the Medal of Honor podcast, veteran stories of strength, courage, and perseverance. I am your host, Tiffany Marching. I had the privilege of speaking with Major Bernard Tony Jr. He served in the Army both as an enlisted NCO as well as an officer. When he was enlisted, he made it to the rank of Staff Sergeant. He had served as a Russian linguist as well as a French linguist. His last assignment was one that I bet he never expected to get when he first started out. Let's listen in to this conversation.
No matter what the circumstances that they found themselves in, whether they're transitioning or have been out of the military for quite some time, is that you hold up the nation. You're the less than 1%. You have done something irrespective of you served one tour, one assignment, one contract, or you served more than 20 years like myself. You're the less than 1%. So your sacrifices are not wasted. They're probably something that I'll hold near and dear in my heart until the day I die. And I hope that you can see that you're special in so many different ways. And the freedoms that we enjoy as we go through this election campaign and things like that is that you ensure those freedoms. Without your sacrifices, we wouldn't be able to do the things that we do or say the things that we say, or have any of the freedoms that we enjoy like no other nation in the world. I think that should be something that I hope that a veteran keeps in their heart. And that is a value proposition that I give to the veterans on Veterans Day.
This podcast is brought to you by Acuity Benefit Consulting. Retaining military veteran talent is critical to your bottom line. So give them a specialized resource for the benefit that they value most, VA disability compensation. Acuity provides them with an in-depth, one-on-one educational session on VA disability benefits, curated to your veterans' needs. For more information, contact Navy veteran Ray Hun at acuitybenefitconsulting.com. Again, that is www.acuitybenefitconsulting.com.
Welcome.
In your bio, you said that there were two assignments. I think, what was it? One was at the White House. Was the first one at the Pentagon and then the White House, or what was that?
So depending on, my enlisted career or as an officer?
As an officer, yeah.
In my officer career, I was primarily assigned in the Pacific, so Hawaii and South Korea, mm-hmm. before moving to the White House.
Okay. Now, when you're at the White House, if I read this correct, you functioned as a PA on Air Force One, or am I making that up?
Just about everywhere. So anywhere the president or the vice president was, or the first lady for that matter, a PA was always in and around that space to be able to provide continuous medical care for our principals.
And I want to ask you a similar question that I asked General Petraeus. The question I asked him was there a sense of it being surreal being in the Oval Office? That's the question that I asked him. So the question that I would ask you is very similar. Having to be around the leadership of this country to provide a service to them if needed, was there a bit of surrealness of that I am taking care of the leadership of this country.
Absolutely. I think one of the things that, you know, when you're selected for the position, it feels surreal. Certainly in those first 30, 60, 90 days, it feels surreal. You're kind of enamored by the fact that you're, you know, at the White House and everyone else is peeking through the gates to see if they can catch a glimpse of the White House, but that's where you function. And you're always around these people and these personalities that you see in and around the leadership, the president and the vice president and their staff. So you're always around it. At some point, I think this was the case for me, because it became business as usual, you know, and it became just a job. It was probably one of the most important jobs I've ever had, and definitely one of the most high profile and interesting jobs. But it became sort of like, for lack of better words, a function that you serve. Mm-hmm. And so for me, the function would have been the same if I were taking care of a homeless person on the side mm-hmm. of the road who just got shot, as it would be for taking care of the leaders of the free world. Now, the implications are different, mm-hmm. but I will tell you that my job was really to be a person that humanizes other people. Mm-hmm. And I think that never went away. It just so happened to be that I was taking care of the most important people in the world, which brings a certain level of urgency that my care for humanity didn't change. Mm-hmm. So to your question, yes, it was an amazing experience. And I used, you know, there were times that I had to stop and the proverbial pinch yourself to realize, look at where you made it in life.
I was going to say, stop and smell the roses. Is that when you go and you go, I'm going to go to the rose garden so I can stop and smell the roses?
Yeah, actually, you know, I made a post about that on LinkedIn. One of my friends that's now retired as a commander told me to do just that. He said, listen, you're tired, you're down, you're traveling, go stop and smell the roses. And I thought that it was a figurative thing, but he actually meant, no, literally, go over to the rose garden and smell the roses. Be in that presence. Realize that you have this experience that most people will never have the opportunity to have.
When I stopped and smelled the roses, my roses that I smelled had a security clearance. I mean, not everybody can like smell these roses. They smell better.
These are secure roses, absolutely. Yes.
Yeah, and that's what you just said is very similar to what he said. He said that there were points when he would sit in the Oval Office and he would feel like he was like almost out of body, just looking at the Oval Office and say, man, I'm sitting in here. But then he said it got to a point where it's like, okay, I'm here to do a job. It's business as usual.
Yeah.
But like you said, it's just, you know, same job, same functionality, but a person or people that everybody knows or knows of.
Right. And again, it goes back to the implications. Every human has the same value, in my opinion, but mm-hmm. different implications. If something were to happen to one of our nation's leaders, then that there's implications as far as continuity of government. Mm-hmm. And that is far-reaching and very profound. And I never lost sight of
that. That takes HIPAA. It's like being in your position that you were in there. I guess because I agree with you, people are people, and providing care to people is the same no matter who they are. But it's like, I imagine working in that position is like HIPAA on steroids. Because,
right. Yeah, that's right, what it absolutely. Is.
Man, I can't imagine. So,
because everything has every element of that. Entire position has national security implications. Mm-hmm. And so that just changes the dynamic.
Yeah. So I think with that question that I'd want to ask is, and I know that you're limited on what you can and cannot say and share because of that position you're in. But I wonder, are there any like good stories, experiences that you had while working in that position? Whether it was, go ahead. Sorry.
I would definitely say, you know, there wasn't a day that I didn't feel blessed to be there. But I think what was probably the most profound is that that I was at the White House during the during the pandemic, right? And so we found ourselves declaring a national pandemic during my tenure in the White House. I think what was really profound was being able to see all of the functions of the private sector, industry, government working together for a solution. You know, there are a few times in history when everyone seems to work together, you know, perfectly. And usually people don't see Congress or government in that way. They think of it as gridlock. But during my time at the White House, I was able to see everyone's sleeves rolled up and everyone working, trying to find a solution with very little information. And I think that was extremely profound to see CEOs come into the White House and key leaders from every different industry and sector coming to the White House to try to work with our leadership to find solutions for the American people. And that was profound.
Out of all the people that you've been able to meet while in that position, who are a couple of a couple of people that you are glad that you were able to meet or interact with, whether it's brief or longer?
I would say that one person that's really important to me is Kamala Harris, Vice President Kamala Harris. She is a person who is of African American and Asian descent, and I come from a blended household. My wife is Asian; she's Korean, and so my daughter is African American. And so it was almost symbolism in a lot of ways for her to be there, and for my daughter to see me working for the vice president, to know that one day in the future, no matter what the conditions are, that she has an opportunity to reach one of the most powerful positions in the world. And so I think that was very profound from a symbolic perspective. I also really loved meeting and talking to Dr. Ben Carson. Dr. Ben Carson was a famous pediatric neurosurgeon. He wrote an amazing book, Gifted Hands, that was portrayed in a movie with Cuba Gooding Jr. as the actor portraying Dr. Ben Carson. And so to meet someone who came from a disenfranchised, maybe socioeconomically deprived background, such as I, it was great to see, you know, someone like Dr. Ben Carson transcend all the way through medicine and doing groundbreaking discoveries in the healthcare industry, doing surgeries that were almost unimaginable at the time. So it was meeting people like him at the White House that made that experience more enriching. And it was less of a political slant, but it was more of a reminder, if you will, that it's not really where you start, but where you finish. And so I've met a number of people. I mean, I can go down a long laundry list of folks, but obviously working for the president, the office of the president and the vice president is profound beyond belief.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that when I was speaking with the previous guest, that I even posed the question that way, is no matter who is in the office, the fact that you're working with whoever it is that holds that office has got to be pretty amazing.
Absolutely. And one of the things that, you know, I always try to tell people is that you don't get to choose your boss. You know, if I apply for a job somewhere else tomorrow, I wouldn't get to choose my boss. But every leader that I've worked with in the White House, no matter where you fall on the political spectrum, I was able to see the humanity in them, particularly during the COVID-19 pandemic. And so I was able to see the humanity from a personal or more intimate perspective that maybe not every person in America or the world had the ability to see. So again, it was one of those things to realize that everyone has their own character, their own way of approaching a problem or even trying to devise a solution to problems. Everyone's a human at the end of the day. And I try to remind people to have grace. And there have been many instances in recent times when much grace is needed.
Yes. If I was in church, I would say amen to that. but I really am adamant about that. I really am passionate about that. Even with this podcast, I have had people who have been in the National Guard, been a yeoman in the Navy, spent, mm-hmm. People who spent, 3 or 4 years in the military, and then people who have been in the military for decades. And somebody asked me, why shouldn't you just stick with, the low man on the totem pole or mm-hmm. senior leaders and not try to bounce all over the place? And I said, but I'm not bouncing all over the place. Because mm-hmm. At the end of the day, we're all people. And that's what I hope to shed light on when it comes to people listening to the podcast, that while there's a lot of commonalities, like mm-hmm. wearing a uniform and serving our country, mm-hmm. there's also people from all walks of life. And I mm-hmm. believe that that's what makes a team a good team, is having people right. who have a different perspective other than me mm-hmm. at the table. And absolutely. That very difference can bring something to the table that could be the best solution there is. But if I only had people that think like me or act like me, what good is that?
Right. I mean, you're speaking to diversity, not just diversity in skin color and race and ethnicity and background, but also diversity of thought. And that's really what we need to be able to devise good solutions for our constituents in the United States. For the citizens of the United States, is to have a good mix of discussion and a good diversity of thought. Because if you don't have that, you end up in an echo chamber, and you're telling yourself what you believe to be true, and no one's telling you different. And so I think we need to have sort of that that opportunity for differences of opinion and differences of approach.
Can we go back to church again and say amen? I'm kidding. I'm kidding. But I totally agree. I really do. I think that's. And I think for me, yes, it's diversity in thought, but even to backtrack to the other diversity where we look at people because of socioeconomical status or skin color status. But I don't think that skin color is a status. I mean, you don't control what gender you are, although people mm-hmm. are trying nowadays, but you can't control your gender, your height, mm-hmm. your skin color, who your parents are. There's just mm-hmm. so many things that you cannot control. Yet mm-hmm. for some reason, those are the things that we have a tendency to point out and say, mm-hmm. well, I'm not going to interact with you because you're an African-American male. Mm-hmm. I'm a white female, so mm-hmm. It was just not going to work at all. Why?
Right.
I don't get that. That's my two cents.
Yeah, it doesn't breed an environment for, even if you were to just to look at how well we can do collectively, if you don't have a good diversity of thought and opinion and background, then you limit that. Case in point, many countries that don't involve their women within their leadership, within the economic space, in case like that, they tend to do poorly when it comes to GDP and other markers of success. So you definitely want to make sure that you're including as many diverse thinkers and actors and stakeholders in just about everything that you do in order to maximize potential, maximize success.
So I'm glad you mentioned success. Now, my question is, how do you define success? And with that, I would love it if you could include your definition of success professionally, but as mm-hmm. well, but also success personally. How do you know that you have done something successful, that you're on the right track to success?
Yeah. Success is a habitual thing. It's not a point in time. It's not where you can say, now I'm here, I'm successful. It's something that you strive for and achieve on a daily basis. So I can be wildly successful comparatively today, but I may not be very successful tomorrow, literally the next day. And so I think it's a continuum more than a point in time. So for me, success occupationally is being in a position in which I'm making an impact by the things that I enjoy doing. So I've met people who have had a significant amount of rank in their career, or they've achieved a certain very high position and stature within their industry, but they're not necessarily happy in what they're doing. So I don't think that's successful. I think if you're enjoying what you're doing, you're impacting other people in a way that they are able to reach their fulfillment, reach their potential. That's success from an occupational standpoint. From a personal standpoint, it is, what does my house look like? Is my house in order? Or is my wife happy? Are my children happy and thriving? Are my friends able to see me as a person that they can rely on? I think many times in my career, that part of life is not as important as purported by many leaders that I've had moving through the ranks. It was focus on the next assignment, focus on the next award, focus on the next position that's going to put you on a trajectory to get to the next position, sort of jumping the hoop. And when you're on that path, sometimes it can become dangerous. You end up losing your spouse. Your kids don't know you as well. So so is that success? I don't think so. So for me, personal success is to be able to say that I know who I am, I know whose I am, and my family unit is intact, all because they're the most important in my life. You mentioned you had a difficult transition. I did not. I would say I had the best transition possible. I think that the transition was seamless because I started thinking about the transition about 7 years before I actually started the transition. Mm. I had great mentors. One of my mentors made me create a glide path. And that glide path basically said, here's where you are, 13 years in the Army. If you were to stay to 20, 22, 24, what would that look like? And so I created this glide path that had decision points. And those decision points were, do I stay or do I go? Do I stay or do I go? And so I think it
does. Do I stay or do I go?
I think that's right, right? I think you're absolutely right. So I had these decision points in this glide path, and it was wholly dependent on the foundation of my life, which is my family. You know, is my wife going to be in a job that she can't move around anymore? Do I have a kid with, you know, special needs, and, you know, I need to focus more on that? That's not the case for me, but essentially I had these decision points where I said, this is where I hope to be at this point in my career. This is where my family will be in parallel to that. And these are the decision points on which I'll say whether or not I want to stay in service or not. So my decision point was at 20 years, in which I said, this is where I should be at 20 years. Granted, not everything survives planning, but I think Mike Tyson said it best. You can have a plan until you get punched in the face, right? So, I had a goal to make it to 20 years, and at that point, I would evaluate my situation. At 20 years, I was at the White House. Most people would say, wow, you can continue going. You're a major now, you can be lieutenant colonel and potentially colonel. But at that point, I knew that I wanted to be able to devote more time with my family. And I didn't want my children, who are very young now, they're 5 and 3, to remember dad deploying, to remember dad not always there, going to the field, those types of things. And I knew I wanted to be able to go to the Girl Scout meetings and the football games and all sort of kind of things. So I said, this is my decision. While I'm at the top of my game militarily, I think that it's time at this point in my life to transition. Even though the prospect or the propensity was that I would continue to climb the ranks and continue to be successful in the military.
You know, I love that, because I think too many times people lose sight of it. People lose sight of what's really important. It's easy to say, but I just got to do this first, or I got to do that first. And then, and the next thing you know, your five-year-old and three-year-old are like sophomore and senior in high school, and you're like, what happened?
And they don't know who you are, and you don't know much about them.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, we know we have mom here, and you're just the guy that comes and visits every now and again. So, yeah. And like you mentioned, I don't know what the statistics are for this, but I imagine when you look at all branches of the military, how many service members have a family, whether it was started before the military or during, how many people have a family during service, and then when they leave service, they don't have that family anymore, or within the first year or two, don't have that family.
Is that family unit still intact? Right.
Yes.
I don't know the statistics, but I will say we have significant externalities and stressors that a lot of people don't necessarily have that are not in the mm-hmm. military.
Right. And yeah, I mean, the thing that I was just thinking about when you said that was, do we maintain or keep our family intact? And the thing that I was thinking about is your word keep. Well, the question is, was it intact from the get-go? Mm-hmm. And I think many times the service member can easily say, oh yeah, we're good. We're good.
Mm-hmm.
But the family actually saying, but we're not.
Mm-hmm.
But you think
I've seen that quite a bit.
Yeah, you think we're good because you have this job that you love in the military, mm-hmm. but we're kind of along for the ride.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that's, you know, and I think that's where the solution for establishing and maintaining that family unit is communication. Like, are you mm-hmm. really fully being honest with each other? Are you being present for your kids? Do they have a mom mm-hmm. or dad to look up to?
Yeah. No, and again, going back to my previous job at the White House, I loved it. Best job of my career. But there were points where I was really nowhere. You know, I would be at my daughter's recital. So I was physically there, but I was looking at my iPhone, checking emails, and making sure that I'm staying on top of things. So I think I'm at work. Being attentive to things. When you think you're there, you think you're somewhere else, all at the same time, you're actually nowhere. And I realized that. I realized that I was not giving the undivided attention where it's needed sometimes. And so that was part of the decision-making to leave the military at that point.
Yeah, and I even think with that, I love that point, is when you do stuff like that, and we all are guilty of it, but when you do stuff like that, you think you're accomplishing both sides of business and personal, but you're not accomplishing either one of those.
Right. Not to the maximum potential.
Right. No. Yeah. And that's just no bueno. Oh, wait, that wasn't French. Never mind. Man. So do you think you'll ever use French or Russian or language in the civilian sector?
Not in the professional capacity. Let me rephrase that. I work with a nonprofit organization now. I'm a board member of a stepping stone for global development. And so we will likely move over to the African region, West Africa, and now have opportunities to use French there as well.
Yeah.
But my daily life revolves around my children are bilingual, and their first language is Korean. So
I was going to ask you that. With your wife being Korean and your kids knowing Korean, is that a language that you speak as well? And if so, how comfortable are you with it?
I'm not terribly comfortable. So I can speak daily life sort of phrases, and my children understand me and I understand them, you know, at a surface level. But certainly I can't watch the news or talk about something high level. it's really just the day-to-day sort of language that I can use within the environment. So I strive to be better at Korean, but I think that, again, there's always competing requirements for me to expand upon my language, but that's the language.
Yeah, and that's what I was going to ask you too, is that with it being the language at home, is that a goal of yours to be as fluent as possible?
Absolutely. I started that process in 2014 when I met my wife and I had Korean nurses. They couldn't speak English very well, so I started learning language at that point to be able to communicate better with my nurses. And so it's been a goal and it's been a journey. It's not quite like studying in the military where that's your job, is to learn a language. So I don't have that level of concentrated focus to be able to commit to Korean, but it's something that I do on a daily basis to be able to capitalize on being able to communicate with my children and my wife in multiple ways.
Yeah, and I will say for me, I have this love of language too, but I can barely speak English, so I don't speak another language. But I don't know what it is. Well, actually, I do know what it is. It's the same thing that you said earlier. I want to, and can it happen? Sure, I have to apply myself. But I mean, I would love to speak both German and Spanish, and also American Sign Language. And I mean, German and Spanish, I want to be able to speak those because German being part of my background, and then Spanish because it's like a very common language here in the US and other places. But then sign language, I want to learn that because that's a community that isn't really able to communicate because for some reason I either can't hear at all or it's very limited, and sign language is the best way to communicate. And I do think communication is important. That's me. So before we run out of time, and when this one ends, I will have to go because I have to do another recording. But with tomorrow being Veterans Day, if you could say something to anybody who is currently transitioning out of the military or who is already a veteran and their family members, what would you tell them?
Thank you, and have a nice day.